in close-up, over a champagne glass, Popeyes popping. He was transfixed by her eyes, which looked just like his mother's, a shocking recognition that would allow him to understand, albeit years later, why the man he called his father, who unbeknownst to him at the time was actually his stepfather, was always at pains to remind him that the large, heavy-lidded eyes he had inherited from her made him the ugliest boy he's ever seen. For it was not his hatred of my frog eyes which hurt me, he would come to realize, but the fact that he was not attacking me so much as he was attacking my mother. And also by extension, then, my real and unknown father. But what he did see in this moment, clear as the daylight beyond the movie theater's walls, was that he had caught his embittered father not so much in a lie as in an infirmity. For he must have been stricken blind if he was unable to see that my mother was absolutely, beyond any question, the most beautiful woman in the world. This was a lesson in self-love that would be tested time and time again as he moved through the trials and tribulations of his adolescent years, and indeed throughout the entirety of his life. It was also a lesson about kinship, by blood, and beyond it. He had been brought to this matinee by his teacher at PS 24 in Harlem, a 24-year-old white woman whose tutelage would change his life forever. Orilla Miller, or Bill, as he called her, had come to this dreadful ancient New York schoolhouse, as she described it, to teach drama and put on student plays, thanks to an internship connected to the graduate degree she was pursuing at Teachers College. When Baldwin was sent to her by his regular classroom teacher because he was so far ahead of the other students, she was astonished by his intelligence. To my amazement, she later recalled, I found we were both reading Charles Dickens, very enthusiastically, and in our discussions, I soon realized here was an exceptional and brilliant boy. She gave him more books to read and talked to him about these books and about the world, as Baldwin would later write, and eventually she took him to see the plays and films to which no one else would have dreamed of taking a 10-year-old boy. For all this, he loved her, of course, and absolutely, with a child's love. And it was because of her, he conceded, that I never really managed to hate white people, though God knows I have often wished to murder more than one or two. It was also because of her he would write, and that day at the movies in particular, that my first conscious calculation as to how to go about defeating the world's intentions for me began. For he knew that not only did his father consider him ugly, but he was also considered by everyone to be strange, too bookish, too sensitive, too undersized, too effeminate. But after seeing Davis on screen, he abruptly stopped his practice of putting pennies on his eyes every night before he went to bed in his misguided effort to make them smaller. He now realized that my infirmity, or infirmities, might be forged into weapons. And if he was indeed strange, and I knew that I must be, he would go on, otherwise people would not have treated me so strangely, and I would not have been so miserable. Perhaps I could find a way to use my strangeness. A strange child, anyway, dimly and fearfully apprehends that the years are not likely to make him less strange. Therefore, if he wishes to live, he must calculate. And I knew I wanted to live. The presence of Bill Miller in Baldwin's life confounded his parents, particularly his father, David Baldwin. The first time she came home with Baldwin after school to ask permission to take him on an excursion to see a real play on a New York stage, she was taken aback when they stepped into a steam-filled kitchen with a clothesline stretched all the way across it, his mother doing laundry by hand. The air was warm and moist, and the small, hungry faces of Baldwin's many younger siblings were peeking out from behind the drying clothes. In the face of such poverty, the apartment, located in the East Harlem neighborhood known as the Hollow, was dark and gloomy with a dismal view of the Uptown Railroad tracks. Miller became even more desperate to help. When she was told that his father was not home yet, they set a date for her to return another day. Soon, as Baldwin later wrote, my father took me aside to ask why she was coming, what interest she could possibly have in a house, in a boy like me. The only white people who ever visited them were welfare workers and bill collectors, and Baldwin's mother, Burdish, usually dealt with them because his father's temper was too excitable, and he felt violated by their presence. After all, he spent his days laboring as a worker in a ginger ale factory on Long Island, and his weekends